Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Big ride this week. Fast ride, Pete. And particularly when you consider what Toyota managed to do last weekend.
Absolutely. That was history, wasn't it? History in the making. Well, history made.
Absolutely. Mm. How many years have been having a crack at it, and finally, under the guidance of Fernando Alonso and a couple other blokes, Toyota for the first time won the iconic 24-hour Le Mans race in France and did it in convincing style. I think the best news about the whole thing is, though, Pete, is they've announced that they're going to build the car, a road-going version of the car that run the race.
Yes, isn't that terrific?
That's blown my mind.
You're going to need deep pockets, of course, and there won't be many of them, but at least they're making them, and they're making them available to the person in the street.
You're right, and you just know that all those blokes over at Mercedes-Benz who last year kind of said, we've got the hypercar to end all hypercars, we're putting a Formula One engine in the back of a car. Toyota's going to wipe the floor with it. Aston Martin, the Valkyrie, the one that Adrian Newey's designing from Red Bull. Again, it's just not going to be in the hunt.
Not that I would say no. I would not say no to any of them, of course, but still. It is going to be. It's terrific, and more power to Toyota for doing it.
I would suggest it would be difficult for either of us to get in or out of any of the previously mentioned cars.
Well, what you'd have to do, of course, is take on an extra gym course to be able to throw yourself sideways into the vehicle and doing it gracefully and at the same time reaching out with a toe and pulling the door closed.
Exactly. Oh, dear. Well, we've got James Lang from Toyota Australia. He's going to give us a bit more detail on what happened at the race and what to expect in this new hypercar that's coming from Toyota. Now, BMW, they've just been on a massive model launch, it would seem.
Haven't they ever?
Three brand new models, including a new version of their best-selling car, the X5.
The X5, yep.
The new version of their sports car, or their roadster, called the Z4. You don't see a lot of them around anymore.
No, you don't anymore. And there was a time when they were everywhere with that long nose and that little sort of cabinet looked like it was stuck on at the back. And
right, didn't it? Yes,
yeah, but you know, still a great car, and
it was, yeah.
We'll look forward to seeing what the new one's like.
Indeed, and I believe there's an Australian connection and a connection, again, to the people we were just talking about, Toyota. So we'll explore that with Lenore Fletcher a little later.
Yep.
We're also going to take you around the block in a very cool, very supercharged Jaguar F-Pace, the 35T, the S variant. I'm going to take you for a crack around the block a little later in that.
Can't wait.
Just wait till you hear it. And it's an SUV. It's a family car. It shouldn't sound as good as it does. Anyway, you will hear it later. We'll also hear about a car that, you know, if there was ever a car made for Simon Live, this is the one.
Well, it's going to be fast.
No,
it's going
to
be practical, functional.
It'll be practical.
Stylish, amazing.
No, it won't be stylish.
Gosh, well, I think we better keep our ears and eyes peeled for that one.
It's a new, they're calling it funky, new little SUV.
Oh, so that could be good.
We'll find out what it is later. I'm sure they're going to sell about 4,000 of them.
Good on them.
And cars that aren't selling, which should be, are ones that are propelled by a battery electric only system. Australia really kind of falling behind the game when it comes to take up of electric cars, when it comes to support for them on the roads from government and the whole lot. And in fact, the guys at the Electric Vehicle Council, Behad Jeffrey in particular, the CEO there, have done a bit of a State of the Union, what does the sort of market look like when it comes to EVs at the moment? Some shocking reading, and I think some very surprising statistics will come from Backhard when we get him on the show in the next few minutes. But before we get him, we got to get this bloke. Yep, he's back. He is the maestro. And look, you know, he moonlights as all sorts of things, you know.
Yes.
Some days he goes to the local village cinemas and becomes an usher.
Yep.
Other days he heads to Canberra and works in the Prime Minister's office.
Yes.
Thursdays, I believe he drives buses, and he's been spotted wearing shorts and very long socks and sandals.
Very good.
Today, however, we're going to get him to put his car hat on and get him to talk Kia Stinger.
Oh, very good. And, of course, in the interests of fairness and on, you know, all sides, he does also look after the opposition leader's office as well.
Oh, he does too. Yes, absolutely.
He's everywhere and he's everything to all people.
And he's Joel Elms. Hello, Joel.
In the interests of fairness, or what about it being in the interests of accuracy?
never let that get in the way of a good story.
Oh, now, before we get on to Kia Stinger, I do want to hear about your time driving a bus. Because as buses go, this one was from Hino, I believe, and it's, I know this sounds weird, but it's a really cute looking bus.
Yeah, and it's got a cute little name too, the Hino Poncho, which is a funny name, unusual name. But it's different to things like the Mitsubishi Rosa and the Toyota Coaster, which I'm sure our listeners would be familiar with.
Oh, we've all been on a winery tour in the back of a Toyota Coaster.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. But the thing with those buses, and it goes right back to the early days where buses used to be built just on truck chassis.
Yeah.
So if you remember back in the day when you got off the school bus, you had to go down two or three stairs because you were sitting right up high.
Yep. Yeah.
And then over the years what's happened is they've shifted the engine to the rear of the bus. So all your normal buses you see in cities and country towns,
sure.
Well, the engine's right up the back, so you've got a flat floor. You've got a really low floor now.
Of course, mate. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and so the easy to get onto.
Yeah, the Hino Poncho is the first small bus that's available with that configuration. It works really well, and it's DDA compliant, which means it's been recognised as being disabled-friendly, and you can get right down low. It's got a ramp and things like that all ready to go when you buy it. So it's a really clever little thing. Yeah,
yeah, well, cool. Mm. Well, if you are interested in the bus, check out Joel's review, heavyvehicles.com.au. We are, however, here to talk about a car that I think's been overlooked. Everybody, and I mean everybody in the Australian motoring industry, has raved about the twin-turbo V6 Kia Stinger, and rightfully so, because it is spectacular. A lot of people, though, have missed the fact that there is actually a two-litre four-cylinder turbo, struggling with words today, I've got to say. The four-cylinder version of the Stinger, is it all right to be called a Stinger? Is it in the same league? What's your thoughts, Joel?
It goes back a lot to the current edition Camry. Now, I'm from that sort of mindset where you think, you know, the more cylinders and the more kilowatts, the better.
Like, yeah.
I was, you know, brought up thinking that if there was a four-cylinder available or a six or an eight, you'd go for the bigger engine.
But I'm
consistently seeing this situation where the smaller engine is the more enjoyable drive. I think if you remember back a few months ago, we were talking about the Camry.
Yeah.
And had my first go in the four-cylinder Camry, and I liked the four-cylinder better than the V6. It's a lot lighter, gets along, you know, almost just as well, and a more nimble and more enjoyable drive. And I've got to say, I think the Stinger is the same. I think that the four-cylinder version it'd be hard to pass up. But in saying that, I have to put it right up on the front, I'd still go for the Optima GT.
Right.
Oh, that is also a great car. There's no doubt about that, Joel. I think it tends to be overlooked, and always has been somehow.
Well, the biggest difference, it's slightly smaller, but the Optima is still a very large, medium-sized car.
Mm.
You've got front-wheel drive instead of rear-wheel drive in Stinger, but there's not a lot of difference other than that. You lose a little bit of power and a little few newton metres, 5 newton metres, I think it is the difference between the two. But the thing is that you're losing 100 kilos off the Stinger four-cylinder and about 200 kilos off the V6 Stinger. So that really, I think it keeps it in the mix. Not a huge amount of price difference between the Optima GT and the Stinger four-cylinder. But look, if I was going into a Kia dealership, I would certainly make sure that I don't just make a beeline to the Stinger, that I'd check out that Optima as well, especially if you might be considering the four-cylinder Stinger.
I must say the V6 Stinger, with which I've had the most experience, it wasn't just the engine that was so great about it. It was the handling prowess, and in the way that it was so planted on the road, front end and back end, you just couldn't. It was unflappable. So you would think that the 100 kilo weight loss would make it even a better performer.
There is nothing wrong with the V6 Stinger at all. Go has more than adequate performance. But if you're shopping the Stinger four-cylinder up against, it's more closely aligned with the Optima GT. So I don't think many people are going to go in thinking, I'm not sure which I'm going to buy, the four-cylinder or the V6. You know, if you're performance orientated, you have to go for the V6. But for more the average everyday person, you know, there's not much between those two, in my opinion.
And the costs of running them, it's going to be using less fuel, presumably.
You think, yeah.
Yeah, well, instantly you've got weight savings. So as soon as you have weight savings, generally you have fuel saving. And naturally the four-cylinder would be more efficient than the V6.
Mm.
You know, if money is no option and you're a performance car guy, you'd buy the V6 for sure. But,
sure.
You know, if you're just a more casual observer, I think it would be well worth checking out the Optima GT, which I think sounds better than the Stinger as well.
See, there you go. All-round advice.
That's
everyone
amazing.
Is catered for when we talk to Joel.
You yes, very
nobody
much.
Nobody ever gets missed.
Yep.
I think we should do this again next week.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, great.
Thank
talk
you, Joel.
To you
cheers.
Thanks, guys.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180kW engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au. For the latest truck and bus industry news, visit heavyvehicles.com.au. We bring you coverage of the latest new models, new technologies, and issues that matter to owners and drivers. Read heavy vehicle reviews, and you can win some great truck-related prizes too. heavyvehicles.com.au. Truck and bus news every day.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel, where motoring starts.
Yeah, we've started with a big bang and we've still got lots to get through. Today we're going to go driving in a supercharged V6 Jaguar F-Pace, which is very exciting. Going to hear too about a hypercar from Toyota. That's right, not Mercedes, not Aston Martin. They have hypercars coming, but it looks like Toyota may well have pipped them to the post. We'll get all the details for you a little later. But as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've heard from our good friends at the Electric Vehicle Council. I always stumble when I try and say that name. I don't know why. Maybe Beckhard Jeffrey, the CEO of the Electric Vehicle Council, can shed some light on why I get so confused with the name.
I can help you with plenty of things, mate, but for the simple words, I'll leave that butt up to you.
Yeah, good. All right. Well, I'll work on that. The reason we were keen to talk to you today, of course, is in the last couple of days, you guys have released a sort of a state of the union, a state of the shape of the electric vehicle market here in Australia. And I think pretty much the takeaway I got from it was we got a lot of catching up to do, particularly when you look at it sort of on an international level.
Yeah, so our report, The State of Electric Vehicles in Australia, is really a snapshot in time. We have a pretty bold agenda for what we need to do in the electric vehicle industry and the market in Australia. And there's a report on how we're going. Our market needs to be at least 10 times larger just to be an average size market globally. So we're still doing, pretty awfully. We are starting to grow and we're starting to see some changes. But really importantly for Australia, we can't see incremental changes. We really need to see a step change.
Yeah, like a seismic shift. Well, I suppose when you look at the cold hard numbers, more than 1 million cars sold in Australia last year, and of those, only 2,284 were electric only.
That's exactly right. And the symptoms inside of our market are really as a result of policy and market uncertainty. So there's no problems left with EV technology for why our market should look the way that it does. We have $30,000, $40,000 electric vehicle models available around the world. And governments right around the world have said, hey, this is really good stuff. Bring it to our marketplace. Start investing in it here because we want to create jobs out of it. We want the public health benefits that come out of it. But we haven't seen that happen in Australia. And as a result, we haven't had that investment in models. We haven't had the investment in charging infrastructure.
And the thing is, we've got the sort of the factories sitting idle, in Port Melbourne, in Adelaide. We've got skilled a workforce that's, used to making cars. We really could pick up the bat and run with it, couldn't we, if we wanted to?
Well, I mean, we've got in Australia what we've always had. We've got the rocks in the ground. So when it comes to making cars, comes to making the batteries inside of cars, we have all the raw minerals sitting there. And we have international investors. People have heard a lot from Mr. Sanjeev Gupta, and there are certainly other ones who are looking at us and saying, this is natural for you guys. You have a part of the pie. Why not grow it as much as possible? Build the cars in Australia. Sell it to everyone else. Become a hub for the region for electric car manufacturing. But in order to do that, you have to at least be up to par with everyone else on where the market is. You can't be 10 times further behind, and try to become leaders in the manufacturing sector.
Why do you think the government's dragging its heels so much? It's almost like as if they're protecting the combustion engine.
Yeah, it's an odd thing. They're really just, lumping it inside of the too hard basket along with a whole range of different issues. Look, certainly we are talking about a pretty large technological transformation from, the way that petrol and diesel cars have been on our roads for the last few decades towards electric vehicles. So we're not just talking about new cars. We are talking about a new technology, and that requires quite a lot of hard work from governments to get their heads around. We're trying to do as much of the hard work for them as possible, providing them the advice to make this as easy as possible, but they do need to be partners with us on this process. And to date, you know, it's just been very slow moving.
How are, I suppose, businesses holding up their end? You know, we're constantly hearing about, you know, businesses striving for, you know, neutral carbon footprints and claiming to be, you know, environmental warriors. But are they buying, you know, fleets of electric vehicles?
Well, before they can buy the cars, they need to be made available in our market in the first place. And really, that's that first job that governments need to do, to say, hey, yes, we have cars and buses and trucks and vans on our roads, but we want the new technology on our roads. So there are some policy measures that they need to take there. But then certainly the conversations we have with businesses is, yes, once they're available, we'd like to transition straight to 100%, because, A, we care about the environment, we care about public health, but very importantly, they're actually there's a lower cost to operate these vehicles as well. We want to be paying less for the electricity than we would be for petrol, so that we can lower our costs.
And of course, you know, you get into the servicing of electric vehicles, you know, compared to what needs to be done to a combustion engine, it's virtually nothing. And a lot of people aren't even aware that, you know, brakes don't need to be changed anywhere near as often when you've got an electric car, because of the regenerative braking that happens that kind of harvests energy.
So this is what we say, between the maintenance and the fuel bill savings that you get, for the average family driving around 15,000 kilometres a year, you're saving around $1,800 to $2,000 per year just on the lower operating cost of the vehicle. So yesterday, it cost slightly more to buy an electric vehicle, but every year you get that saving back because it costs so much less to run.
Now, there's a counter-argument put by those who aren't really in favour of electric vehicles, and they say, look, if everyone becomes electric and this is going to be this enormous drain on the power grid, which at times can't cope already, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, there are two answers to that. One is that if we go to half of all our cars become electric, we're talking about 10% more electricity demand being required. But very importantly, the way our electricity system works, and I come from the E side, not the V side, of the electric vehicle device.
Right.
The way our system works is we actually have a whole ton of extra electricity being generated and a whole ton of capacity in our grid, but we just don't use it most of the time. Mm. Everybody uses power at the exact same time, and that's the problem that we have. They get home and turn everything on, and all of a sudden we have to, you know, it's like a road being really congested. We're trying to jam all the traffic through at the one time. Whereas with electric vehicles, it actually helps us level that out. It says, well, if you're at work during the day or if you don't drive to work, you can charge in the middle of the day, you can charge overnight. And really, the eventual answer is that software sorts this sort of thing out for you. You plug your car in and it'll just charge itself when it's cheapest to do so. And as with new models of vehicles, it'll slightly discharge the vehicle or sort of sell some power back to you or make you some money back when it's most affordable to do so as well.
Hadn't thought of that.
Not a bad thought.
Yeah.
We have got a long way to go. Do you see any light at the end of the tunnel?
And look, what I'd say is encouraging for us is that, you know, we started this process a bit over 12 months ago, and we were really at a stage where we were still speaking to governments about what is an electric vehicle? What do you do with it? How do you plug it in? Now, very excitingly, we're in a stage where we do have a legitimate process underway with every single state and federal government across the country to work out, well, how do we respond? You know, what is most appropriate for Australia in terms of how we should respond? Given that we're, you know, so many years further behind, it'd be great if that was moving even faster. But at least there is something in place, and governments have stood up and recognised, okay, there is a role for us to play here. You know, this change has been occurring around the world, and we're being left behind, and we would like to see that change.
Do you think, Beckhardt, would a change of government help our cause?
Look, certainly when we speak to people, when we talk about, you know, federal politics, when we speak to the opposition, their ambition is much higher in this area. And it does align to, look, there's no getting away from the fact that of the myriad benefits of electric vehicles, one of the ones that makes the most sense is you make as much clean energy as possible, renewable energy as possible, and you run as much of that as, you know, you run as much of your economy from that clean energy as possible. And there's obviously one side that is very in favour of that conversation and one side that sometimes hedges their bets on that conversation. So, definitely.
So that is that the case in the, say, the United States as well? Is it sort of along party political lines, or what do you think?
It's a funny thing when it comes to electric vehicles, because right around the world, this isn't a partisan issue. So we have one of the, you know, greatest leading EV governments around the world, and the UK is a conservative government, and they're pushing for the ban of petrol and diesel vehicles by 2040. Mm. We see this right across Europe, right across Asia. In fact, you know, of all the windbacks that Donald Trump in the US is now doing, removing the tax incentive for electric vehicles is not one of them in the US. He's keeping that one in place.
Wow.
So recognizing there are public health benefits. There are, you know, you're putting money back in the pockets of families and businesses. there are environmental benefits as well. That's just one of the many that we're talking about. And very importantly, there's an energy security one. If your country doesn't have oil, you have to get it from somewhere else. But you can make your own electricity.
That's true. Are there any major hurdles or stumbling blocks that the developers of electric vehicles that the developers of electric vehicles have to overcome, are still to overcome?
Look, we are talking about, and this is why we see countries around the world saying, well, we want to phase out petrol and diesel by 2040. Because we are talking about a technology that continues to get better every year and while it's getting cheaper every year as well. But so what we're talking about around the world today is, well, we have an average market share of 2% of all vehicles being sold are electric. In Australia, that's 0.2%. So, you know, we could be talking about, why aren't 10% of people inside of electric vehicles? Now, there are some people who, you know, they say, well, I have specific needs and an electric vehicle doesn't meet my needs. That's fine today. But we want to make sure when the technology is ready for you that it's available for you as well so that you get all the benefits of it. So, yes, this is a technology that we are setting a course for because we can tell where it's going to be in 5 and 10 years' time. And we want to make sure we're ready for it, not letting it sort of suddenly happen to us and paying costs like having to retrofit a lot of our infrastructure and a lot of our buildings to catch up.
Well, it's a very interesting challenge, and it's something that anyone who hasn't driven an electric vehicle should actually go and take one for a spin. If they're a doubter, they may change their mind just by driving it.
It's always my best advice of if you're a car lover and you love driving, get behind an electric vehicle because it is a much nicer and more powerful drive.
Beautifully said. Bechard Jafari, CEO of the Electric Vehicle Council. I got it right in the end. Mate, thanks so much for your time. Great talking to you as always.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
One of the smartest and most versatile products in the Altrex Auto Accessories range is Skin's Invisible Protection Film. Apply to your car's headlights or paintwork to protect from stone chips and road debris damage without affecting aerodynamic efficiency or the look of your car. You can use the ultra-thin and strong film on items around your house, such as windows, furniture and white goods. Order a roll now at altrex.com.au or pick some up at your local auto accessory retailer. Skin's Invisible Protection Film. The clear choice in paintwork and headlight protection, and a whole lot more. Noticed all the light commercial vehicles on the roads today? Well, we figured this booming segment of the market needed a new focus. Ute and Van Guide provides unbiased reviews of new utes and vans available on the Australian market. We drive and use these vehicles as they were intended to ensure you get the best information and opinions based on real-world experience before you decide which new ute or van to purchase. And stay up to date with the latest commercial vehicle news too at uteandvanguide.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by Behind the Wheel.
Yeah, we're going driving in a supercharged V6 Jaguar F-Pace. And yes, it is the SUV, but thankfully it does have that incredible sound that Jaguars are so renowned for, particularly these days.
Yep.
Simon Lai, he's driving something equally as good from Mitsubishi, the Eclipse Cross Sport.
And Simon would not have it any other way. He loves it. Well, I think he does. Well, let's find out what he really thinks.
It's a car that you could imagine if someone said, what sort of car do you think Simon Lai drives? The first thing that would pop to my mind would be a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross Sport.
Yep, nice car. He'd love it.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, if you think of Lenore Fletcher, you would immediately think of, I reckon an X6 M BMW. You know the one with the big triple turbo thing going on. That'd be her style. I think so.
Yes, actually, maybe. You're right. And also, but you sort of also think elegance and style. But that vehicle has it as well. So there you go.
And when Lenore's in it, it's sort of like a complete package.
Correct.
Yeah. Lenore Fletcher. Hi. How are you going?
I'm very well. I'm very, very entertained by your opinion of me. But I have to say to you, you got it in one. That's my favourite car.
Is it really?
Oh, good work.
It's got a bit of attitude. You know,
that's right.
And I like a bit of attitude.
Yes, even though, you know, you are, if I may say, demure and diplomatic and fabulous.
Absolutely.
But
a
bit of attitude occasionally doesn't go astray, does it?
No, it certainly doesn't. It doesn't. But we have got another vehicle that is the very, very height of luxury and elegance, and that's our new 8 Series.
8 Series BMW.
How about
if
this?
If you've not seen it, go immediately to behindthewheel.com.au. There you can fix your eyes on what is possibly, I think, the most beautiful car ever produced by BMW. It is stunning.
Absolutely glorious, but so glorious. Would you be a bit scared to to actually take it out and take it for a spin?
No, no way.
No, you wouldn't actually. No, you wouldn't worry about scratching the wheels and doing things like that.
Worry about that.
Oh my gosh, those things that really.
I've got friends in the workshop.
You're marvellous.
So when are we likely to see the 8 series, Lenora in the flesh?
Look, we won't see it here this year, I shouldn't think, but I'm certain that we're going to get a very good glimpse of it before the year is out on an international basis.
Gotcha.
So
that's good.
I think we will be seeing that. And, of course, we've already seen the GTE version in action on the racetrack
now. At Le Mans, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Now, BMW aficionados would know of the 850i that used to be on sale. Was it in early 90s? I think the last of the 8 series was the last time we saw an 8 series?
It was quite a few years ago, and it's interesting that you bring that up because the 8 vehicles in the BMW range, they're always a little bit special, a little bit apart.
Mm. Yep. Mm.
And, I mean, you can think about the Z8 there, and I guess the one that I always think of is the i8, our
Yes. So, oh, that car, I love it.
So, you know, they really stand apart in terms of their styling and design, and I think that that's the really key, that the elegance of the lines of the vehicle. But, of course, as usual, there's been a lot of emphasis on the performance and the dynamics as well.
Of course, it is a BMW and a revised 4.4 litre V8 twin turbo, I think.
Might give you enough power.
Should do, yeah. I reckon that should do.
You mean even for Chris?
I'm not sure. I don't know. It sounds pretty darn good anyway.
It does. Well, we'll keep an eagle eye on seeing that and seeing some dates as to when we'll get to see it and smell it in the flesh. But there are some other very important vehicles coming from BMW with the wraps taken off. A car that I've always loved, the Z4, the BMW Roadster.
Really excited about this one. Now, we saw the concept at the Frankfurt Motor Show in September, and that was a stunning vehicle. And you always really hope that the concept or the production vehicle doesn't stray too far from the concept.
Correct.
Now, we haven't really seen this car completely yet, but it's looking good. It's looking good.
And it has an Australian link to it, doesn't it?
Well, we have Calvin Luck, who is a designer at BMW in Munich, and he has a little hand in quite a few of the vehicles that we're bringing out at the moment. So Calvin's becoming a bit of a celebrity around here.
And what, rightfully so.
Rightfully
he's responsible
so, yes.
For what, the X1 and the, I believe, X2.
He's having a little hand in all of the X vehicles, but now he's sort of straying into passenger vehicles. So it's really fantastic to see what he's producing.
Indeed.
That's good.
Now, I know there's an unusual tie-up when it comes to the Z4. It's a sort of a cooperative effort with our friends at Toyota.
Well, I think that you'll see a lot of cooperation going on in the automotive industry at the moment because what's happening in a lot of the time is the technology is moving along so fast that it just makes sense for manufacturers to pool their resources and to work on the innovations together.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And two of the absolute powerhouses of the industry, BMW and Toyota, teaming up. It's a great idea.
Pretty formidable union, that
indeed.
One.
Oh, it's amazing because you have, you know, just such amazing technology from both sides. Put that together and look out.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, it seems it wasn't all that long ago that the wraps were taken off the latest incarnation of what I think is BMW's biggest selling car, the X5.
Yes.
And there's a new one on the way.
There is a new one on the way, and I was very lucky to see it in early June in South Carolina, and it is amazing.
Now, is it fair to assume that it will take its cues from the recent released and rather beautiful X3?
Look, I think there's certainly a family resemblance between all of our X vehicles, but the big deal I felt in terms of the X5 when they brought it to us and we were able to have a look at it seems to have a lot of the technology that's going into the X7.
Oh.
So, you know, we see this amazing new technology come out into the top of the line and then it finds its way down very quickly into the rest of the line. So that's pretty exciting from the point of view of what you're going to see, you know, in terms of the interior, the cockpit, screens galore in there, I can tell you.
There's obviously been a big push inside BMW to up the ante when it comes to interiors. I was lucky enough to have the keys to a 5 Series recently, also the X3, and it really has sort of lifted to a new level. There's a sort of an attention to detail in there that's pretty much unmatched, I've got to say, at the moment.
You know, a lot of the stuff and the sort of fittings that we're seeing inside our BMWs, we're taking a lot of that technology and the production methods from Rolls-Royce. So you can see that there is a real association there in terms of the quality and the finish and the actual surfaces. It's making such a difference. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. The great thing is, though, you get into a current day BMW and you can still see the lines that you'd see in a 1992 5 Series, for example.
Yes.
Now, whilst it's obviously a lot more modern, the architecture sort of seems to be the same, and they're able to work magic by kind of keeping that family resemblance.
A nod to heritage, almost.
Yeah.
A delicate balance.
That's right.
I like it.
That's right.
I like it too. It's lovely.
Well, if you would like to feast your eyes on any of these lovely BMW models, unfortunately we don't have a photo of Lenore up at the website, but maybe we should kind of try and
work that out. No, that's a blessing, trust me.
Head to behindthewheel.com.au to get your look at 8 Series, the new X5 and the incoming Z4. Lenore Fletcher, as always, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Lovely to speak to you too.
Well, look, last weekend, Pete, you were around at my place, and in fact, I think it was at about 4 in the morning that Lisa came out and yelled at us for being too noisy.
Because we were enjoying the telly.
Exactly. Le Mans. It's just addictive viewing.
Yep.
Those beers you brought round, though, I think you brought too many because I can't quite remember what happened between 4 a.m. and about 10:30.
I think you must have consumed mine because I'm perfectly clear-headed about the whole thing.
Okay. I am very clear-headed about who won. It was a historic victory. First time ever after years and years of trying. The Japanese giant that is Toyota finally experienced Le Mans glory with Sebastian Buemi, Fernando Alonso, and a fabulous Japanese driver whose name escapes me at the moment behind the wheel. I reckon James Lang from Toyota knows who that bloke is. James, welcome behind the wheel. How are you going?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for having me, guys.
And
how are you?
A Japanese driver, what was his name?
Kazuki Nakajima.
That's the guy, yeah.
That's the one. And what an amazing race. What a magnificent car. That car is just awesome.
Hitting a bit, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's certainly a bit of machinery, isn't it?
So is everyone still drunk at Toyota celebrating the win?
No, we've been celebrating responsibly. It is a work week after all.
But, absolutely. Thank you for putting it like that. I'd like you to have a quiet word with Chris later on to just sort a few things out for him. Thank you.
But yeah, look, an historic win, one that you've been trying to get for a very long time. So massive congratulations need to go to everyone there at Toyota and Gazoo Racing. But I think the most exciting thing to come out of this is a commitment from Toyota to actually build the car, a road-going version of the car that won Le Mans.
Yeah, that's right. So the announcement was that we've committed to developing that road car based on the TS050 Hybrid, which was the car that won on the weekend. So very excited, obviously. And, yeah, it's a car that shares the same 2.4-litre petrol engine and the same hybrid system as well with that V6 direct injection twin turbo. So, yeah, very, very excited about that.
You look at it, what, about 735 kilowatts?
Yeah, so 1,000 horsepower, that's it.
That's out of control. So I reckon you'd be feeling pretty pleased with yourselves, considering, you know, we've heard about the Aston Martin Valkyrie being developed by Adrian Newey and the Red Bull Racing Team and Mercedes-Benz and their car with a Formula One engine. This thing's going to whip both of those cars, isn't it?
Well, look, it's hard to say. I mean, obviously, we're very excited about this car and, you know, it's developed inside by our Gazoo Racing Company and it's certainly something that we're very proud to announce. So it's early days, but I guess time will tell.
You're a very diplomatic operator, James. Well said. Well, I know that a lot of people are going to be highly excited about this and very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's certainly a new era for the company with a lot of exciting cars in the pipeline. And, this is, you know, something just at the next level that we've not had for a very long time or, in fact, ever.
Ever, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a very exciting time for us.
So what sort of time frame are we looking at to actually see a road-going version of this car?
Look, I unfortunately can't confirm that. I'd love to see it sooner rather than later.
Are we talking a year or 10 years or sort of somewhere in between?
It'll probably be somewhere in between, so sometime in the future.
And I imagine, you don't know how much it's going to be, but I'm thinking more than a million.
It's hard to say, but being so far out, we can't quite confirm.
Sure, okay.
He's asking you all the tough questions here.
Well, you know, you've got to ask these questions because sometimes the answer comes out and then yes. They go, damn, I shouldn't have said that. But James is obviously a very good operator.
Very much so, James.
You've got to ask. If you ask, you'll never know, will you?
Well, exactly. If you don't ask, you don't get.
Yeah.
Everyone needs to rush to behindthewheel.com.au right now. Get your eyes around this GR Supersport concept. It looks amazing. I reckon it'll do 0 to 100 in under 2 seconds. It's just going to be absolutely epic.
Glorious.
James and everyone there at Toyota, thank you for doing this. This is the best thing Toyota's ever done.
Oh, glad. We're very excited and we're glad you guys are excited.
Good work, James.
You can relax now. Go and have a beer.
Thanks, guys.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180kW turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au.
There's no doubt Australians love European cars. And on those European cars, Australians love to fit European-style license plates. To complete the Euro image and ensure your special plates are protected against theft, fading and other damage, make sure you get them the best possible protection. We are, of course, talking Altrex number plate protectors. Order your European number plate protectors now from the online store at altrex.com.au and they'll be shipped straight to your door. Altrex.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Well, as we know, Peter mentioned at the top of the show that Rachel Franco has been called off on an international modelling shoot, so is unavailable.
Oh, I know.
But you know what? I think it might be a bit of a blessing in disguise that she's not around to hear this because the fan mail that comes in each and every week, we do get a lot of email.
Oh, do we ever?
There's a lot of old school people out there that continue to write. You know, they send to the PO box.
Yep.
And it seems to be older ladies inquiring as to the availability of Simon Lai.
You know, you're absolutely spot on.
So the people fact that he's been on air with a baby, a brand new baby, obviously.
That's right.
They don't care.
And they're
prepared to cut Simon Lai's wife's lunch to get a crack at him.
No, isn't that awful? And there's Simon in the back seat trying to just pin that baby seat.
He's focused on the ISO fix.
Yes, exactly.
Not knowing that Doris and Yvonne and Beryl.
Yes, and Ethel. They're all just, they just love his work. Simon, how do you cope with this adoration?
Well, that's the nicest thing you guys have said so far, I think.
Oh, you're marvellous. You're marvellous. And we're all big fans, Simon. So tell us, how's your week been and what are you driving this week?
Yeah, it was okay. I hopped into a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. That's a bit of a mouthful.
Oh, you're the guy. Right, okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's, as the name suggests, it's a crossover, one of those small SUVs. Everyone's getting in on the act.
Sure. Now, I always thought Mitsubishi already had one called the ASX.
Well, this one's even smaller, I guess. So,
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I feel it's slightly smaller.
Okay.
It's got that kind of more sleek, elongated shape, that really squarish SUV shape. Everyone wants to have that really dynamic look with all the sharp edges and stuff, a bit like a CHR, for example.
The Eclipse Cross I've seen on the road actually reminds me a little of a late 80s, early 90s Honda CRX, but just kind of a pumped up version.
Yes,
you know,
or steroids.
That kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it does. And, the outside, it does look attractive. Inside is great. The drive is a 1.5-litre turbo engine. And it's amazing. I always say this, what they can do with turbos. I mean, it's linked to a CVT.
It doesn't have the greatest
immediate input, but, you know, for 1.5 litres, there's a bit of oomph there. It does take a while to get up to speed, but once it does, there's a bit of power there.
Right, so once you've wound it up, it's not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah,
it's okay. The drive is what we'd consider quite an average drive. That's not a bad thing, but you know, nowadays, the expectation is, you know, it's solid, it's stable, it's got nice direct steering. There's a lot of cars like that now, so that fits the bill.
Yeah, fair enough too. SUV always used to mean four-wheel drive.
Oh, yes. Something you'd like to take up the up the side of Mount Kosciuszko or something.
Yes, exactly.
Don't do it on the road. Don't be silly. No.
How would the Eclipse Cross do that? How would it go at fording rivers and climbing mountains?
Well, the one that I had was the all-wheel drive version. All the rest of them are two-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
The range starts at about 30,000, and this one was 38,500 for the Exceed.
Wow.
So you know you can do some light off-roading stuff. There's a couple of modes there for different terrains, but nothing too full on.
Right. Does it keep itself in all-wheel drive all the time, or do you have to actually switch it into all-wheel drive?
No, you can press a button, which is good. I prefer that actually.
Yeah. No. True. Very
yeah.
true.
Yes, yeah. That's handy. Yeah, that's
what about room in the back and all that sort of stuff? Can you get decent cargo in it or?
It is pretty average, you know, for this kind of size. My biggest gripe is always the storage in the back. It is a small SUV. You know, I'm not a fan, and I can't understand why people buy this category. But in the back, there's really not that much boot space. My test now, litmus test, is my pram. And for most cars, even sedans or whatever, you can fit it in lengthwise. This one, I always have to put it in sideways. So, you know, there isn't a lot of room in there. There were a couple of things, though, that worth mentioning. This Eclipse Cross Exceed comes with two sunroofs, which is something I've rarely ever seen.
Wow.
So there's, like, one in the for the back seat and one for the front.
Yeah.
And even the window, the rear view window is split. You know, it's one of those things, which is, it comes from that really dynamic design that I just mentioned before. So when you're looking through the rear view mirror, you can see a little bit more, but then it's split in half by a crossbar.
Just like the old CRX.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But it's really off-putting. I mean, you can deal with that, but the thing I found...
No, it's annoying. I don't like those.
Yeah.
But when you drive at night, it's actually a bad thing, because I found if you have another car behind you, and it's just positioned at the right spot and just at the right distance from you, that bar blocks out their lights. And if you have, as in this case, one of those auto-dimming mirrors, then you can't see anything at all unless it changes its distance. So, you know, you might not even know it's there unless you have the sensors.
Right,
and,
okay.
And there's no... Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned that the interior is nice. What's the fit and finish like? Is it good? Is it well-designed? Does you get in and think, this is quite luxurious?
It's neither too... you know, spiffy, and it's not, you know, underdone either. It's got a nice touch screen. Just that whole, you know, cockpit layout now is quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
All favours the driver and that sort of thing. So, a pass mark.
Excellent. Cool. All right, so all in all, the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross, not too spiffy.
Sounds like me.
Hey! Don't sell yourself short. Not in this show, Simon. We know how good you are, and
Before you go, would you recommend someone going? But someone that you liked, someone that you actually kind of had feelings towards. Would recommend them to go and buy a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross?
Well, like I said, I'm not really into small SUVs, so in that case, no. But if you are after one, then yes.
Very diplomatic.
Yeah.
See, that's why you get all the mail.
That's it.
We'll talk to you next week, mate. Thanks, heaps.
All right. See you guys.
Cheers.
Alrighty, it is product review time for another week. All thanks to our good mates at Alltrex Auto Accessories. And this week's product of the week is Workshop Wonders Silicon DD Aerosol. And I know, Pete, you're a big fan of this product.
Very much so. In fact, I would never be without it. Now,
you've actually brought a couple of bottles with you into the studio today.
Absolutely,
as
I said.
Do you really need to be carrying it around?
Never be without it. You tell us what some of the good things are it can do.
Well, what it does is it helps keep your car's sunroof sliding freely and watertight. And we all know how much of a fan you are of sunroofs.
That's quite funny. Actually, of all the things in cars these days that I'm not a fan of, sunroofs is it, mainly because they always let in too much glare, and also because I have very, very pale skin. I sunburn like crazy, and the last thing I would do is swan around with the sunroof open. Also, the other thing is, have you noticed that if you open it, the air goes pop, 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 pop.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So I think, actually... What are these for? Anyway, let's get back to our lovely product. Because
well, that's why you need this workshop one, the silicon DD aerosol. So
very
that,
much.
You know, if some random person gets into your car and opens a sunroof, you know it's going to close quickly
yes.
and it's going to create a seal.
They're going to be told, close that and hurry up about it, will you?
And also make sure that all your rubbers are in good shape.
That's right, because you don't want any leaks. You don't want any leaks in the cabin, because that would be terrible, especially if they happen to find their way into the electrical loom. No thanks.
Exactly right. Well, this basically protects and lubricates your rubber, which you know everybody needs a well lubricated rubber. See, it's just all day I just haven't been able to speak. So I think we're going to move
you
on
this
to
yourself.
The Car Plan Workshop Wonders Silicon DD Aerosol. The best thing, it's not just about rubbers, but it actually helps stop squeaks and prevents things jamming. And we all hate a squeak or a rattle in the back of a car.
Oh, I cannot stand it.
If you've got a bottle of Car Plan Workshop Wonders Silicon DD Aerosol, which you'd buy for only $9.99, you'd never have to worry about it again. Get yours, just like Peter Hitchener. Get two like Pete.
Am I sounding like a grumpy geriatric? Am I sounding like a grumpy person at the moment?
No.
Because there are two things I hate in cars.
Oh, here we go.
Sunroofs and squeaks. I cannot stand them. And you hear a squeak, and then you can hear nothing else but the squeak. You can have the most wonderful music playing or wonderful a podcast on the radio, but that little squeak gets in the road.
Yeah. Well, get your bottle of silicone onto it. You can buy it now at alltricks.com.au.
I can't stand sunroofs.
No, I know you can't.
But you like them, don't you?
All right, so we've just made it into the very beautiful Jaguar F-Pace. This is the very latest edition. It's hosting a very luscious 3-litre supercharged V6 under the bonnet. We're talking like 250 kilowatts. And a sound that you don't really experience in any other SUVs, unless we're talking like really high-end SUVs like the AMGs from Mercedes or the X5M from BMW. But Jaguar's sedans and road-going kind of coupes, known for their sound. And the great thing is you get the same sound in the SUV. It's actually really, really good. In fact, you can even get it, even though the interior is really very insulated, you'll get a sense. Just have a quick listen. See what I mean? It's just got a bite about it, a bark, and it's something that's really very satisfying. I've got to say, the 250 kilowatts is also very satisfying. This car really is, I know it's such a cliche, but it's a sports car in an SUV body. And the body, I've got to say, it's got to be the best looking SUV on the road. Designed by Ian Callum, the man responsible for many Aston Martins, many HSVs for that matter, but also I think the most beautiful car on the road, the Jaguar F-Type, their beautiful two-seat roadster. And you can really kind of see the family resemblance around the tail lights, around the headlights. Now this cabin, got to say, is just beautiful. Understated, a bit like the outside, simple stitching and simpler design flourishes mean that it looks elegant without being gaudy or over the top, and you can see the attention to detail everywhere you look. You know, the stitching that goes down the console is perfect, the feel of the steering wheel, spot on, even the way the headlights and wipers work. You know, there's a tactility about the instruments in here. The big iTouch Pro screen, got to be 10 inches wide, maybe more, maybe 12. It's really simple interface to use. I've always said BMW is my favorite when it comes to infotainment systems, but closely followed these days by the Jaguar Land Rover brand. This system is really great to use. You can swipe through like your mobile phone, and you've got all sorts of different things like a web browser. You can bang it in valet mode, so that will basically lock the glove box and lock the boot and only let the valet open the door and start it and drive it into its car park and bring it back. You can control the seats. There's a button for cameras where you can kind of get front-going cameras. You can get 360-degree view cameras. The radio, which also includes digital radio, which is great these days. The seats in here are just beautifully comfortable. We've got a beautiful two-tone sort of ensemble of white and grey leather. And I've said it before, but I've got to say, I think out of all the SUVs, the F-Pace from Jaguar is possibly the best sized of the lot. It's kind of halfway between the size of a BMW X3 and a BMW X5. So not too small, but not too big. It's a great family wagon, and this is why it's so great. You ready? How could you not love that? 104 grand before on roads and options. It's not cheap. It's not the most expensive out there. And if you want a premium SUV that has you stand out from the crowd, I don't think you can go past the beautiful Jaguar F-Pace.
One of the smartest and most versatile products in the Altrex Auto Accessories range is Skin's Invisible Protection Film. Apply to your car's headlights or paintwork to protect from stone chips and road debris damage without affecting aerodynamic efficiency or the look of your car. You can use the ultra-thin and strong film on items around your house, such as windows, furniture and white goods. Order a roll now at altrex.com.au or pick some up at your local auto accessory retailer. Skin's Invisible Protection Film. The clear choice in paintwork and headlight protection, and a whole lot more. Havel's just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180-kilowatt turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.